Back in 1942, a 23-year-old senior at the University of Washington, Gordon Hirabayashi, was convicted of violating a wartime curfew and evacuation order that had been imposed on citizens of Japanese ancestry. Hirabayashi refused to believe it was right to treat a U.S. citizen that way and waged a 45-year fight to prove his point. Today, Gordon Hirabayashi is with us today on Seattle Afternoon to tell us a little bit about his experience, both in the courts and also during the internment experience. Thanks very much for being with us today on Seattle Afternoon.
Glad to be here.
What was your reaction when you first heard that President Roosevelt had signed the order which required internment for Americans of Japanese ancestry? Do you remember?
Yes. Technically, it was the authority that was given by him to the Secretary of War and the generals under him to do whatever was necessary for the national security, national defense.
This came several months after Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, it was about nearly 3 months after. And under that authority, the generals began to issue restrictive orders, including curfew and eventually uprooting. And I felt, well, since it's war... And since immigrants from Japan, aliens, were not allowed to naturalize, so they were still aliens, and then with war breaking out, they became technically enemy aliens. So I thought, unfortunately, they may be restricted.
Mm-hmm.
But I never dreamed that I would be treated the same.
You thought that it wouldn't apply to Japanese-American citizens?
No, not to citizens without cause. You know, if there were some suspicious citizens, he'd be picked up, interrogated, and so on, but not on the basis of ancestry. I even tried to assure the first generation, my parents' generation, Don't worry, we'll look after the home front and be in touch with you people. The more cynical of them said, hey, if anything happens to us, you'll be there right next to us. I said, no, we're citizens.
You thought we'd
this
we'd
is
be
America.
Okay.
It's different.
When did it become apparent to you that you were mistaken in thinking that it would not apply to Japanese-American citizens? Was there a moment when you realized?
Well, it came in two degrees. First, there was a restriction in our movements, curfew, from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. We had to be inside of our residence. And movements during the day limited to 5 miles without additional permit. And this was softened to this extent. All enemy aliens were so restricted. That included the Germans, Italian, and Japanese nationals, plus all persons of Japanese ancestry. That included me. So that was the first time I was included, and I didn't like it. But being educated to obey the law and so on, both publicly and at home, I went along with it. I was living just off the campus in what was then called Eagleson Hall, the University YMYW. And I was the only person of Japanese ancestry at the time. There were other nationals, mm-hmm. Filipinos, Chinese, Canadians. Majority were persons of white ancestry. Americans.
How did your fellow University of Washington students react at the time when these restrictions began to be placed on you and your movements?
Well, except as it being a national order, they felt it was my dorm mates felt it was unfair or unnecessary. But war is war. They shook their heads and said, you know, we'll help you. We'll be your timekeeper. And so at the library or at the coffee shops, about 5 minutes to eight, they'd say, hey, Gordon, it's 5 to 8. And I'd grab my stuff. I guess I did that for half a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, dashing home to my dorm, I stopped, and a question emerged in my head. How come I'm dashing home and my dorm mate's not? And the answer just wasn't acceptable to me in my desire to be a first-class citizen. It just didn't fit. So I turned around and went back, and at first they were shocked, but I guess they stood by me because I never was arrested for curfew. It was on my own admission when I was asked after removal orders came. I felt I just couldn't ignore that and stay where I am because I would make the Y dorm an accessory. So with my Quaker lawyer advisor, I turned myself into the FBI. But during the curfew, after the first part of the week, I just ignored it and lived like a regular American on the campus, and nobody paid attention because nobody was conscious of curfew.
What was it like when you got the removal order? This was an order telling you you would have to leave the University of Washington and go to a special internment camp, right?
Yeah, and not only me, but everybody was leaving district by district. Our district was the last to move.
Were you shocked to get it, or at that point did you realize it was inevitable?
Well, it's a funny thing. While I took that stand with curfew, I fully expected to be on the bus to Western Washington Fairgrounds, which was barbed wired and installed as a temporary place, because it was an order. And for about another half week of that order, and by that time it was spring term, spring quarter here, and I had dropped out after the winter quarter because I knew something's going to happen and I wasn't going to finish. So I volunteered for the American Friends Service Committee, a Quaker social service outfit, and we were helping families get ready to go to the pickup points, especially families whose fathers had been picked up right after Pearl Harbor. And I thought, well, when this district's time come up in a week or so, I'd be on the last bus joining them. But another question emerged. If I couldn't accept curfew, how could I accept this? Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same principle based on ancestry. Sure. But it was much more severe.
Well, you did a fairly bold thing. You walked into the office of the FBI and turned yourself in.
Well, if I didn't do that, I'd be picked up somewhere as a fugitive or something. I'd rather just walk in. I prepared a statement, and I walked in saying, as an American, I believed in democracy and the rights of citizens, regardless of race, religion, national origin, creed. And unless you accuse me of espionage or sabotage or something, ancestry isn't a crime, so I can't accept this. And I just went in to say that. Mm-hmm. And they tried to persuade me, spent most of the day trying to persuade me to sign up and go.
Oh, really? They didn't just want to lock you up. They tried to convince you that it was the right thing to do.
And each time I'd say, well, you know, you asked me before to sign this, and there's been no change in the regulations, so there's no change in my viewpoint. I can't sign it. You have to register. And so even after I was in jail, at the end of the day, they put me into the federal holding tank that they were renting from the county. Mm-hmm. About after the weekend, Monday or Tuesday, the local director of the Army removal process called me over, and they took me out of jail and brought me there, and he greeted me very cordially. I thought, gee, what's up, you know? And he said, you know, I heard nice complimentary things about you, and I'm sure after our discussion, everything will be fine.
And he tried to convince you also to go along?
Yes, eventually, but at first he gave me a report on the process, the largest population center in Southern California. He said that came off 100% success. Northern California, the next most populous area, that came off with 100% success. And he said, as soon as we finish our conversation, the Northwest will be 100% also.
100% success, meaning that everyone who was asked to go to internment camp willingly went.
No incidents, and no funny objections, and
well,
so on.
You were different than most Japanese Americans in the fact that you stood up and said, this is wrong, and I'm not going to go.
I was shocked. I expected that most of the people go, because that's the tendency. But I thought there'd be 50 or more young guys like me without vested interests, idealistic and all that, without family responsibilities, kids, dependents. You know, relatively we were free to decide on principle. And so to hear that there wasn't a single incident of cases was a real surprise to me.
You were convicted of two misdemeanors and spent up until 1987 trying to get those misdemeanors reversed and overturned in your particular case. By that time, there had been a presidential order. The presidential order under which the wartime regulations had been issued was rescinded. Congress had done some things to limit its power to round up citizens to make sure that this kind of thing wouldn't happen again. Why was it important for you to get a reversal in your case when these other things had already happened?
Well, some of that, in 1976, the executive order 9066, under which these eviction orders and so on took place, was rescinded by President Ford. Some Japanese scholars discovered that that order, executive order, was still on record. Presumably, it could be put into action by some president, if he wished, you know. And there was some hint that Nixon might use it as a way to make a special case of defense for his situation during the Watergate crisis. So that part was rescinded, but my case was still on. Mm-hmm. I mean, I finished my sentence, but I'm on record as a violator.
And it actually kept you, it affected you in later life, right? It kept you off juries, did it not?
It did. It wasn't supposed to, since I had served my sentence and it was a misdemeanor, so I didn't lose my civil rights. I asked the judge when I got out, I said, what's my status? And he said, when I got my amnesty, President Truman, on a kind of a random basis, a certain number of wartime convictions were rescinded by decree, and my name happened to be included. So I called the judge and I said, what does this mean? And first of all, he looked it up. I only read it in the paper. Mm-hmm. He looked at me, he said, that's right, your conviction of the second part was rescinded. I said, what does that mean? He says, you get your civil rights back. What did I get back? He says, your right to vote, sit on juries, this and that. And I said, I didn't know I lost them. I've been voting ever since, all through the war. So I didn't personally feel much different from that, except I still had these other two cases, convictions. Mm-hmm. From the first trial, and I was hoping that it was such a... I had two reasons. One was I wanted my record cleared personally, and secondly, I wanted this cloud of suspicion. People feel that, you know, if there's smoke, there must be a fire somewhere. And if the government's going to that extent of removing people, there must have been some good reason for it. And then they justify it. Well, I wanted something done to erase that cloud. And then finally, I was ashamed of doing something. That's one thing. But the Supreme Court finding some way to uphold it constitutionally, it's an embarrassment to me as an American. And so I wanted the courts to have a chance to clear their record.
Do you think that the kind of internment that we saw during World War II could happen again to American citizens as it happened to Japanese Americans?
I think not as quickly and casually. I don't know if I should use the word casually, but it didn't take them much investigation to do it. With these cases and the redress movement that exercised all kinds of information across the country and in the Congress and so on, I think it'll be more difficult to issue that kind of an order, including citizens, on the basis of ancestry or some immutable characteristic like that. However, I have no hesitation in feeling that it could happen again easily. And I have no hesitation, even though I won a reversal in 1980s in the Coram Nobis rehearing, I have no hesitation in feeling that under similar kinds of hysteria that happened, like in the 40s, the courts could find ways to uphold that kind of action, even the courts.
How do you respond to people who to this day will say that given that time, shortly after Pearl Harbor, given the fact that the world was at war, it may have been a mistake to intern Japanese Americans, but it was understandable?
If they said that we need to make defense measures, therefore we're going to have to move all citizens off the West Coast or off a certain area of the West Coast, that's one thing. But if they said pulled off certain groups of people on the basis of ancestry, that's just denied by Congress as a factor of guilt. Ancestry is not a crime.
Gordon,
so I would have to object to that. I can't agree to that at all.
Gordon Hirabayashi, who as a 23-year-old senior at the University of Washington was convicted of violating wartime curfew and evacuation orders, fought it in the courts for 45 years and eventually won a reversal of those convictions. Thank you very much for being with us on Seattle Afternoon. I really enjoyed the chance to get to talk to you.
Thank you.